We're going to call this The Heavens Declare. And yes, that should not be a possessive, but that's the way it goes. The Heavens Declare the Glory of God. We'll work out the possessiveness later. Let's take an IQ test. A group of four things will be set before you. Three of them have something in common, and one of them seems out of place. Find the one that does not belong. What is the answer? Correct. This is a smart group. Can't put nothing over on them. What is a sign? That's in the first part. Okay, welcome to part two of this two-part series dealing with the plan of redemption in the stars. I'm going to review a little bit of part one just so you can connect some dots. In the first hour of part one, we examined the weight of evidence to determine about the virgin birth because there's been we've been taking a lot of flack about the virgin birth being a pagan myth and being impossible and the scriptures don't say it and, I mean, just round and round and round. So I finally got a chance to take a look at it, and the evidence was overwhelming. I was actually a little surprised. But anyway, I was happy because I was hoping it was going to work out that way. So that's the first hour. Now the second hour, this was a tie-in with the teen project that took place last year, in which we dealt with the wise men coming over, eventually arriving in Bethlehem, and y'all are familiar with the story. But before we could do that, we had to put together some research to understand about the birth of Yeshua. And the problem was that there was an error in Josephus, which I'll give you just a few seconds of. When the printing press came into existence, the gentleman who was typesetting Josephus changed a 2 to a 0. 22 became 20. And for 3.5 centuries, Christendom was at a loss to figure out when Yeshua was born. But just in about 10 years ago, the error was discovered, corrected, and now we were able to figure out the birth of Yeshua. Do I have it on the next slide? Let me see. Well, I'll tell you if I don't. In the process of working out the birth, we found the star of Bethlehem, which is what I was really looking for. Okay, we identified the wise men, we identified the time they arrived in Bethlehem, and that was 15 months after the birth of Yeshua. We got all that laid out. And the birth of Yeshua was the first day of the 7th month of 3 B.C., so we were glad to get all that worked out. That's in the previous teaching. Okay, also in the second hour, and this was another important aspect here, four major scriptures that we use, obviously we used a lot more, but these were four that put, this is where we assembled the base of the teaching. And I went ahead and included them just so you could see them. Abraham knew the plan of redemption, and the way he knew it, now I'm not saying that he did not have God speak to him in a voice that he could hear in his human hearing. I mean, that's very possible. I'm just saying that he knew the plan of redemption, and he knew it because of the zodiac. That's how he knew it, and it's in the scriptures. And that's what I was bringing out, and I have those scriptures here. The first one, and you're familiar with all four of these scriptures, so there's no surprise it's coming here. This is Paul talking about the Messiah. And he's quoting Galatians 15:5, I think. Yeah, 15:5. Genesis, what did I say, Galatians? Sorry. He's quoting Genesis 15:5, and in it he says, to thy seed, and it wasn't plural. See, in the past I've read that, and it's like talking about multiple seeds, but when you look at the Hebrew, it's singular. Paul has it correct here, and what he's referring to is that this particular statement to Abraham was that the Messiah is the one who's going to make all this work. He is the key player in the plan of redemption. And that person will come out of your loins. So, we connected 3:16 with 15:5. This is the passage here. And this is, he's being asked to come out of his tent, look toward heaven, and tell the story of the stars. And he said, from this story, and the story goes through the complete plan of redemption. so shall the Messiah be of your seed. So we connected that dot. Now, one of the things that was the hint to show us that the gospel is actually in the stars, Paul was dealing with the Jews and saying that they know what's going on. And he says, have they not heard? Well, of course they've heard. Then he quotes Psalms 19 and says, their sound, their being, the zodiac, the constellations in the zodiac, went out into all the earth and their words unto the ends of the world. That is Psalm 19:4. So that's what he was quoting in Romans 10:18, and I'm going to put up the whole scripture for Psalm 19, 1 through 4. Just let me put it up there. The heavens declare the glory of God. Their expanse is declaring the work of his hands. Kind of a parallel statement. Every day they are speaking, and every night they are revealing knowledge. Doesn't matter what your language is or whether you can talk. It doesn't matter. Every place on earth, their voice is heard. The stars' voices are heard. Their voices go out into all the earth and their words to the end of the world. This is the passage that talks about the message. All right, now, I want to give you the background of this because I need to make the picture bigger for you than just our solar system, these few little stars that are sprinkled around Earth. You know, we got some planets here, and then we got some stars that we circle around. I need to expand your vision of what is happening so that you come at this. Don't look at this as this little teeny blue dot, and we got some stars that circle it every 25,000 plus or minus years, and, you know, all this good stuff. As big as that is, and as important and as cool as that is, and I'm going to get into it because it's really cool, you need to see the background to the entire universe before we get there. So that's what this is. Right now, and this has been going on for the last 10 years, astronomers are talking about God. And I'm not talking about the Christian astronomers. I'm talking about the atheists and the agnostics. When the Hubble Space Telescope was repaired recently, I think that was in this decade, scientists were able to take a look, and they estimated that there were 200 billion galaxies. You can figure out how big that number is. And within those galaxies, there was 50 billion trillion stars. That's 50 to the 21st power, which has no meaning to me because it's just too big. But that's a lot of stars. Now, the Big Bang model. What is happening? What has happened with the astronomers? Is that they now have the instruments available to be able to trace back to the beginning of matter, energy, space, and time. They didn't always have those instruments. So, and I'm going to develop this story here as I go along. What it is called is Big Bang cosmology, the Big Bang model. Now, before Albert Einstein and his work in general relativity, the theory of general relativity, most scientists, they believed that the universe had always existed infinitely, never had a beginning. And so there was plenty of time for evolution to take place. Well, when Albert Einstein came up with his theory of general relativity, that changed the entire landscape of scientific study. And now, you know, the man was a Jew, but he was not a believing Jew, because when he found out that the universe had a beginning, that meant there had to be a beginner. And he did not like what he was finding. But he couldn't escape what his mathematical calculations were telling him. So time continued in the 20s and the 30s and blah, blah, blah. And based on the theory of general relativity, they were able to compute certain things that they would have to know. If, in fact, the universe had a beginning, there would be certain things that would take place. For example, if the Big Bang took place at a spot and then went out, that means that the universe is expanding. Things would be moving away from each other. There would be background radiation. They would be able to test the temperature of it. there would be a variety of scientific things that they could look at which would confirm whether or not the theory of general relativity was going to be able to support Big Bang cosmology. At this point, the Bible was still not consulted. All right, so let's move on. What they have found recently is that not only does the universe continuously expand, but it expands at the just right rate to make life possible. Now, you don't know exactly what that means yet because, unfortunately, my special slide is about, 10 down. But it will make sense when we get there. But I will give you a few pieces of it now. If the universe had expanded too quickly, life here would be impossible. And if it had expanded too slowly, life would be impossible as we know it. Now, I'm not saying you couldn't have some kind of other life. But the way that the universe expands and stars supernova, and then there's the star ash, and then new planets are made, and stuff is moving around, and there's gravitational impacts, and then protecting planets from meteors, and we're talking a laundry list of stuff. Every single thing has got to be there exactly the way it is. So light elements are created, heavy elements are created, so that in this speck of time on this little blue ball, in this one piece of the huge universe, life is possible. And that's where we find ourselves. And this is what the astronomers have discovered, and they're not happy about it. This is another non-Christian believer, theoretical physicist. This gentleman, I don't know if you've ever seen him, but you probably have seen him on the news. I think he's a paraplegic. He's in a chair that rolls, and he's got stuff to talk and things. I don't have a lot of details on his life, but he's one of the more brilliant scientists in the world. And this is his quote. After they got all this locked down, he said it would be very difficult to explain why the universe should have begun in just this way, except as the act of a God who intended to create beings like us. What this quote comes out of is when you start to put together the several hundred things that have to be exactly the way they are for our place and time right now, for those things to exist, it is so statistically out of, it's just to the 120th power stuff. It's so far out there that it is equal to statistically impossible. And so they're looking at this and saying, there's got to be a causal agent working outside of space and time to make this happen. All right. Albert Einstein had the theory of general relativity. We all know about evolution, and there was a lot of discussion of that in the 1800s. I'm sure you all are quite familiar with it. After they were able to take the math that they were able to break off of his theory, they knew how the universe should be. And in the 60s, we finally got to a place where they create the instruments where they could test to find it out. And when they found out it's exactly what they were expecting, the guy who made these instruments won the Nobel Prize. So that was really cool. All right, this is an astronomer who got his PhD from the University of Toronto and did his postgraduate work at Caltech on quasars, which quasars are those things that came into existence 1 billion trillion trillionth of a second after creation, before atoms and protons and electrons existed, before there was light. Quasars came into existence, and that's what he studied. Alright, his quotes. Oh, by the way, he's not an atheist any longer. The only holy book or book of philosophy that predicted the universe would be structured in the way that it is our book. And I'm like, yes. It kind of goes back. I remember somebody asked me, they said, that whole thing about Matthew and he brings in the Magi, and it's like, Matthew really screwed up doing that. Because, that's thrown us off for centuries, bringing in these wizards and all this and stuff. They missed the big picture. The reason he brought the Magi in is because the Magi were high, noble politicians from another nation who recognized kings from all over, the area, They were in Persia, but they had been in for other kings in Rome and things of that nature. And by recognizing that they came and acknowledged Yeshua as king, he was bringing the highest level of proof that could exist at that time. But if we don't put our minds back in the first century, we're going to be clueless on some of these things. And this is what he has gone through and broke some stuff down. I've only included a couple because I don't want to overwhelm. I just want us to have a bigger picture of what's going on here. Whoops. Sorry about that. Another thing that he felt that was important was our book is the only holy book in which the God was who was speaking spoke from outside of time. And see, that's big. So that means that he's not locked down to linear time. Now, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. But see, here's the thing. The atheist and the agnostic scientists are now coming to the same conclusion using math, physics, and all those other sciences. They're coming to the same conclusion and they're going, you know, I don't like this because this is looking a whole lot like the God of the Bible. Uh-oh, sorry. All right, continuing with Hughes' quotes. And this was a big thing for him. If human beings create some religion, it's going to show the limitation of human visualization. In other words, if they're going to write their own holy book, and they're going to talk about nature, and they're going to talk about the heavens, and all this other stuff, because humans have limitations on the whole scheme of things, especially prior to 1960, then they're just not going to get it right. And over again, he saw where other religious books didn't get it right. The Bible was the only one that got it right. Did I skip something? No. Here's what he said. When I read the Bible, I saw statements and teachings that defied the limits of human visualization, which told me this writing could not have come from a purely human source. Now, you know, that particular thing right there is, you know, by itself it's on an island. But when you get 100 of them, well, now you're starting to get slapped upside the head, silly. So this is where he found himself. What it said about the record of nature, according to what Hugh found in our scriptures, was always accurate. I couldn't find any errors in what the Bible said about nature, based on math from an atheist who hated the scriptures. I think that's a good testimony. What are we to make of all the observations that the entire universe appears to have been meticulously designed for humans? All right, now some of you guys who believe that Star Trek is real, you're going to have an issue with some of this, and I understand that, because I think Star Trek is real. But I'm trying to get over that. Okay? I may be descended from Vulcans. I'm not sure. But anyway, this is his quote. When Hugh Ross put together his video documentary on the creation of the universe, which I've seen is very impressive, it was a few years ago, and at that time they had like 200 proofs of how the universe had to exactly be, and all of them were exactly that way, and everything lined up with the Bible. Then just recently, like within a few months ago, he was asked, well, how many proofs do you have now? And he said, oh, I got over 800 now. I mean, this is getting ridiculous. There is no other answer except the Most High God. But now here's the thing. It seems like he did all of this for us. How come there ain't other planets out here with folk in it? And I don't have the answer to that question. But I'm going to tell you this. There is no question that the universe was created for us. Now, if there's other people on other planets, I cannot talk to you about it. But based on what the scientists have found, there's only 4 or 5 planets that exist in the rest of the universe that they can detect that would have any hope of being able to do it. The sun's got to be just right. The orbit of planets around got to just be right. You got to have different planets in certain orbits to protect from other flying stuff as the universe expands out. I mean, it's just line after line after line after line, and our little blue dot wins. That's big. And see, I'm trying to not tell you too much because of my next slide coming up. It's just big. I'll just go on here. He ends that question with, the fingerprints of intentionality and purpose are unmistakable. One of the things you may find when you are looking at information of this nature is ID, intelligent design. This is what they're doing. And see, people, obviously, evolutionists are going to have a problem with intelligent design. Because they don't want it to be intelligent. They want it to come from, what, fish? Well, other things. How about that? All right. Lemurs? Oh, now here's the slide. Okay, our timeline. You all have to guess what this means. That's exactly right. These numbers equal billions of years. This has been proven now by these atheist agnostic scientists who have converted to Christianity. Moving away from the Big Bang point of creation and taking these numbers and dividing them as you move closer by half, by half, by half, by half comes out to 13.78 billion years plus or minus 0.05 or something. Okay. And every star, every universe, every galaxy, clusters of galaxy, the time it's taken to get to this point to create the elements and the laws of physics and the mathematics and the alignment of planets, every single thing had to be there for us to be here like we are. So he put this into, now remember he's outside of time, so you know, what does that mean? He put this into effect 13.78 billion years ago, and we are here right now in the little blue dot doing this little teeny thing. I think he likes us a lot. All right? That's exactly the age the scientists have determined. And if all the stuff was necessary, like I was saying, you know, the stars, they supernova, they create ash, get sucked up in a meteor belt, and it goes over to this constellation, and it goes over to these stars, and they do something with it, and the fusion does this, and this blows up, and I mean, it's just, if you listen to Hugh Ross's work, you ought to look him up on the web, you sit back and go, man, God is God. But that's what my presentation is about anyway. So, today, we're going to talk about the story in the stars, but think about this now. Now, you're going to look at this in a few minutes and go, what? And I agree with you. That's the same thing I asked was what? But there's the story in the stars. The scriptures are showing. I just showed you the scriptures. Paul says, yes, they know about the plan of redemption because it's in the heavens. And that passage from 15:5, you look at it in the Hebrew, it shows that he was looking at the star patterns. All right, of course, like I said, that's in the previous teaching. All right, it's told with picture stories, and you're going to say what? Maybe we'll recite it in unison. All right, what does the story of the stars look like? That's what it looks like. Now, as you look at this, you will see dots, red lines, and then you will see pictures in white. And you're supposed to get a picture of those things based on the dots and the red lines. Yeah, see, what? Ready, everybody? What? I'm telling you what. Alright. Alright, the Maserat, which is the word zodiac in Greek, is from Job 38:32. Here's the story. The basic concept is that God identified the constellations that circle us every 25,000 years. So you think about 13 billion, 25,000, do the math, they've been circling for a long time. Right. God assigned names to the stars and assigned their meanings based on the names and positions. And he passed it down to Adam, Seth, you know, those guys. Now, we don't have any evidence of this, but a lot of traditions point back to that. But at least we know Abraham knew it. ancient Persian and Arabian traditions describe the invention of astronomy to Adam, Seth, and Enoch. You know, I don't know if that's a tradition. You know what I think of traditions. But Josephus did write that their revelation of two coming judgments of water and fire not be lost. I thought that was a pretty cool quote. Okay, the 12 primary signs along the orbital plane are the same in all ancient nations of the world. So, think about it this way. God puts the stars in. He names all the stars. He tells you what this grouping of stars should look like so that you have a visual picture, so when you're sleeping at night and you're looking up, you can see the plan of redemption. He tells the people, they pass it down, and across, I only put a little bit here, I got the Chinese, the Chaldean, the Egyptian, but it's all over. They all have the same names, going back in ancient times. Fascinating story. Okay, now some of the stuff, the constellations, the zodiac, are mentioned in the scriptures. Job 38:32 says, can you lead forth the constellations in their season? Or guide the bear and her satellites? Who makes the bear, Orion, and the Pleiades, and the chambers of the south? He calls them by name, occurs two places in Scripture. And these are some of the mentions there. Deep darkness in the morning, who also darkens day into night. If you're reading Paul in Acts 28, he gets on a boat, they're talking about the twins. That's a star grouping. This is another one. Can you bind the cluster of Pleiades or loose the bands of Orion? Up to recently, we had no clue what that meant. But then we found out that there's certain gravitational forces that are keeping those things together that keep the entire constellation together. So no, we can't break it. Okay, here's the structure. We're going to follow each constellation, reciting the associated story by the name of each star. Now, I'm going to move a little quick, but you'll be able to feel the story take shape. In addition to each constellation, there's also deacons. So if there's 12 and there's 3, that makes 48. And each of the 12 signs are associated with one of the 12 tribes of Israel. Not all people agree with all these assignments. I'm going to give you what I have found. I'm sure that there's some others. This is what I have found. It seems to be close. So it's a place to start. You know, my presentations are a place to start for people who want to pursue further research. So where do we begin? How about the Sphinx? Who'd have thought of that, huh? How many people have seen the Sphinx? Well, don't raise your hand because I can't see it. Head of woman, body of lion, a possible insight which may have been passed down. I know that's speculative, but it works. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with Virgo and end with Leo, which is woman, lion. And I would go into more about the Sphinx and the three triangles that are next door, but we're just going to move on past that for now. There is our constellation. Yeah, I know it's a mess. Okay? But what I have done is I have taken this constellation groupings, and I have broken them out into quarters, and then for each constellation, I'm going to draw a red line around it with a name so that you can see what we're doing. So you'll be able to get there. But before we start, please turn on your imagination chip because you're going to need it to see these pictures. The first one is Virgo. Okay, you take a look at her. You see the elliptic? The elliptic is the line. If you look down here at the bottom, you see Scorpio. You see the line that's going like through his mouth, and it goes to the left and goes through the foot and continues up. Then it goes to the right, out of his mouth, and goes up. You see the elliptic, her foot's on it, and just continues to go up. You can see the butt of the lion over her head. Okay, that's the elliptic that these things go through. All right, let's go. By the way, anybody who wants to pursue this further, this is simply downloaded from Google Maps. Yeah, they do things besides MapQuest, the U.S. This is the version. You have to lay on your back at night with no lights around and look up and see these stars and see the Virgin. Okay? Now, I'm going to show you a better picture in a minute. That's why I said your imagination chip must be on. The promised seed of the woman. You see that there's a branch in her right hand, the ears of corn in her left. the word branch, we're quite familiar with that in the scripture. This particular constellation is associated with the tribe of Zebulun. It happens Nazareth lined up there. You can see up in the corner with the red lines, you can see what the picture looks like. Moving to the brightest stars, these are stars, some of the brightest stars, I put that information in from time to time when I thought it was good. Come on now, you're sensitive. Gloriously beautiful, who shall have dominion, the sun who cometh. I also quoted from different languages just so you could get a feel across the board, not just Hebrew. But the deacons in this particular one are really incredible. We get the desired, the despised, and the coming one. And down there, Deca, we get the pierced. And these are just other star groupings that are within the constellation, they're close enough. There's the picture. The elliptic is going like this, and you can see the star grouping there, and we're looking, instead of the picture being turned this way, the way I showed it to you, it's now 90 degrees down. We're looking at it straight on. The elliptic is going through at the bottom, and this is the picture that you're supposed to envision when you look up at that star grouping. Okay? Next is Libra. Libra, you see the scales there? There is the picture of the stars. You see the elliptic is the dotted red line. Look at this. Libra is the balances. The price, the fissures, balanced by the price which covers. Is that a coincidence? And I did some multiple languages here so you can see this because this is real impressive. Up there, the scales weighing. Purchase, redemption, the station of propitiation, associated with the tribe of Levi. Those are the brightest stars again. There are three stars that are in the scales that are really important. The price deficient, the price which covers, and down below, the price of the conflict to settle the debt. Wow. I'm like, wow. Here are some of the deacons, the three deacons. We have the cut-off one, the victim slain, a lamb, and then we have the crown. So, you know, a few scriptures associated there. And this is what it looks like. You see the stars coming up? There is your scales. Scorpio is next. And you can see, actually that does look like a scorpion, a skinny one. But, you know, you can see the head, and you see the line coming down, you see the tail. I mean, this is pretty good compared to some of the other ones. Wounding him that cometh. Where have we heard that before? Well, I put it up there, didn't I? Okay. Associated with the tribe of Dan, brightest stars are the accursed and the sin offering. That's what the meanings are. The deacons. The serpent is trying to seize the crown. Hercules, we're familiar with him from Greek mythology, the right heel woundeth he who cometh. Pretty interesting. And there's your scorpion. I've now turned the zodiac map 90 degrees because you can see the scorpion at the top right now. Sagittarius, half man, half horse. Okay, there's your star grouping. The archer, bow, conquering. We see that in Revelation. Not that every scripture applies, but I just put some things there just to give you an idea. Associated with Asher. This star, the brightest star, Alpha, Beta, and Gamma. That's the three orders of stars in brightness. Okay, that's how I used it, Alpha, Beta, Gamma, which is Greek. He shall be exalted, and the eagle. The deacons have the harp. I don't know what the harp is. I'm going to have to look into that. But we do have the altar, and we do have Drago, the dragon, who and the trotting on. I thought that was good. And there is him. You can see his picture, that is faith. You can see the bow. And the little orange, the yellow stuff there, you know, it's still a little hard to get to, but that's what it is. Moving on to Capricorn. That looks like a triangle to me. Okay? The goatfish. Yeah, find that in Scripture. That took a while. All right. Naphtali. The three deacons, we have the arrow, Aquila, the eagle, and Delphinus, the dolphin. And some of this stuff is, you know, I put it up there and I was reading through it and I was like, you know, this is like a stretch. Some of it's like a stretch to me. It's probably because I just don't have enough knowledge on the subject yet. So it just seemed like a stretch in some places, but I put it up so you can see it. So there's your Capricornus there. Next is Aquarius, which, by the way, is the age that we'll be entering into on December 21st, 2012. We'll be coming into the age of Aquarius. I want to make that a new song, Mark. At Hanukkah. Okay. The water bearer. We know about that one. Associated with Reuben. Deacons. The southern fish, the winged horse, who is returning from afar, and the swan, the bird of return, to become the judge. So that's the age we're getting ready to come into, is where there's something returning to judge. Interesting. And here is your water core. I also have some other stars there marked just so you can see their positions, but that's your grouping there. Okay, next we have Pisces, and that's, you know, looks like the Big Dipper to me. We have Dagon the fishes tied together in the divided kingdom. I'm still working on that one. This is associated with Simeon, and it talks about the chained and the weak, and in a few minutes we're going to get to one where it talks about the opposite of that, where redemption has been completed. I put a lot of scriptures up for this one because it was talking about, you see where it's talking about the chained woman and Andromeda, the bound one, and then the crowned king, which is the redeemer, and I had a lot of scriptures for that. You'll see when we get to the next one, you'll see how that changes. And here's your fish there, okay? Next, we're going to Aries. That kind of looks like a polygon. But there you see Pallades up there. See the grouping? The ram. Now, it was changed by the Romans, but that was kind of like early on in the Roman time when it was the nations who had it going back further, they had this as the lamb. Of course, we know about that particular stuff. It's associated with the tribe of Gad. Here we have the enthroned woman. We just passed the chain woman. Now we have the enthroned woman. The sea monster is the bound enemy who is thrown over. Perseus is the breaker, carries the sword, breaking Andromeda's chains, carries Satan, the head of the adversary, in his left hand. So these are the stories that go with that particular thing. There's your ram, lamb, there. Next, we have Taurus. There's your green line. You see the red elliptic. And you see, we've moved to the left. You see, Pallades was all the way over. Now it's moved to the right. The ox, the ruler, associated with Joseph. The bright stars, this particular one contains Pallades because it's closer on that side. The deacons, the three deacons, Orion is the day spring, man holding the lion's head in one hand. We just mentioned that. The left foot is crushing the head of Lepus, and there's a stream of fire flowing from that foot, right out of 1 Peter 5:8. The coming branch, coming swiftly, the river of the judge, who is also the shepherd. There's your picture with the kind of like the V on the left side there, and you can see Pallades is grouped up there at the top. Gemini is number 10. They are the twins, associated with Benjamin. The deacons are Lepus, which was the enemy we just spoke about. And this has got Canis Major and Minor, which is the big dog and the little dog. So you got the wolf for the first one, and the lamb being the exalted redeemer in the second one. And there are your twins, with a heart, Okay? Cancer is number 11. You know, the first time I saw cancer, I was like, what a terrible choice of a word. Because, you know, cancer today is a bad thing. The crab, which is the fold, the Hebrew there, the fold, the place of holding. That's interesting, going forward in time, associated with Issachar. the bright stars, the great sheepfold, the herd, then there's the lesser sheepfold, and also there were 24 stars that were circling the pole star. The pole star changes over time, but I thought that that was interesting. And then the Hebrew was redeemed, so those pieces are fitting together. And there is your crab, which I don't know why it's not called a crab instead of cancer, but I'm sure there's a reason. And finally, our last critter is Leo the lion. And there's your lion. You can see Regulus. Regulus was a key star for the Star of Bethlehem. For the wise men, they knew what to look for. And when certain things took place, Regulus was involved in that, then this is what they got. So here, we know Hebrew for lion, associated with Judah. The bright stars, Regulus, that's supposed to be treading underfoot. Sorry. The judge cometh, the judge shall reign. This is just, remember, my English is the translation of the words of the stars. All right. The three deacons, we have the fleeing serpent. Where have we seen that before? The cup of fire and the raven. Alright, so here's the summary. It takes a little bit of imagination to be able to look up at the stars and see these pictures. I've seen the Big Dipper before. That's about the only one that I can identify. And you can't see it in the city with all the lights. You've got to be in a place where there's not a lot of lights and the sky is really easy to see. So, but what is happening here? Let's go back to the Big Bang and the beginning. 13.7 billion years ago, he meticulously designed the universe from a single something so small that 13.7 billion years later, as it shoots out and expands, these things would form that circle our planet. He would assign these names to it. It would be passed down, and the Israelites would see the plan of redemption all the way up to Christ. You know, that's a serious God. And he's serious about us. And I'm real impressed with him. So, what you should come away from this presentation with is that God is great. That's what you need to leave with.